It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, Baltimore erupted in violence yesterday after the funeral of Freddie Gray, a man who died from spinal injuries after being in police custody. We'll talk to a Baltimore Public Radio reporter about the latest news from the city. Yesterday was the funeral of Freddie Gray, a 25-year-old African-American man who died from a spinal injury after being in police custody.
Riots followed in the afternoon. More than a dozen police officers were injured, over 200 people arrested. The majority of those people were under the age of 30.
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan declared a state of emergency last night, and Baltimore City Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake has imposed a curfew from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Baltimore City schools were closed today.
The state deployed hundreds of National Guard members to the city, and the city government has requested 5,000 law enforcement officers from around the region to help.
We have Kenneth Burns with us now. He's a reporter for WYPR, Baltimore's public radio station. Kenneth, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to start by hearing from Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake yesterday. Here's how she framed the riots.
I'm a lifelong resident of Baltimore. And too many people have spent generations building up this city for it to be destroyed by thugs who, in a very senseless way, are trying to tear down what so many have fought for.
The mayor of Baltimore speaking yesterday, is that still the narrative? Is that how the riots are being seen today, the day after?
Well, the mayor has softened her tone. She had a press conference earlier this afternoon to announce that about 70 people from Teach for America, they'll be volunteering while they're not able to teach because schools are closed. But they'll be volunteering to feed students and talk with them, make sure they're okay, and show some care to the students. She said that there are no thugs in Baltimore, but that there are people who are broken, abused, and hurt, and they need help.
Now, news reports from yesterday say there were rumors of violence on Monday morning when the word purge started appearing on social media. It sounds like the police got a lead on that. What happened?
Well, that came out during the funeral for Freddie Gray. Baltimore police sent out an email saying that they've received credible information as far as a threat towards law enforcement officers. A pact between several gangs, including the Blood Crips and Black Gorilla Family, they have agreed to take out law enforcement officers over Freddie Gray. Now, since last night, various gang members have came out and said, that's not true. There is no pact. That is not what we stand for. We don't want any violence over the Freddie Gray case.
So what do we know about who was responsible for the violence yesterday?
The majority are younger than 30, as you read in your intro. Mostly high school students around that age. And there was another report that the gathering was called via social media. There's a high school near where the riot really started to take place, near the Mondawmin Mall, which is also close to the church where the funeral services for Freddie Gray took place.
Now, there are reports of something like 15 police officers being injured. What were those interactions like yesterday between the police officers and those who were rioting?
Well, there wasn't much interaction between the officers and the rioters. In fact, when police arrived to the scene, the crowd dispersed and they scattered many directions. The violence traveled south from the mall to with the CVS that was first looted, then it was set on fire. That was the most known image around from yesterday's riots.
And there was some nonviolent response as well to the death of Freddie Gray. There was earlier nonviolent demonstrations. There were also volunteers cleaning burn buildings, clergy members. What has that end of the response been like?
Well, it was peaceful up until this past Saturday evening. That's when you had the response. That's where you had the violence really come out. Sunday, there was no violence, but Monday, the day of the funeral, after the funeral, that's when the violence escalated. as far as that could play. It's been ebb and flow. But during the riot, there was a group of clergy. They locked arms. They walked down North Avenue praying and trying to keep peace in the community. And you've also had, there's also been stories of people in the community standing in harm's way, really, between the police officers and the people who really went to wreak havoc.
Now, there is a curfew in place in Baltimore. There is the National Guard called in. What is expected tonight?
That's the big question. It has been, this is the first memory that Baltimore has had a curfew like this. It's the first time since 1968 that the Maryland National Guard was called to Baltimore to keep the peace. So that's the main question. Will there be peace in Baltimore tonight? Will there be protests to even try to break the curfew? There is a lot of uncertainty right now that no one really has the answer to.
Kenneth, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That was Kenneth Burns, reporter for WYPR, Baltimore's public radio station. He was here with the latest on riots and the response in Baltimore. We're continuing our coverage of the Baltimore riots yesterday. The violence started in the afternoon after the funeral of Freddie Gray. Gray was an African-American man who died after suffering a spinal injury in police custody.
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan has declared a state of emergency and asked for law enforcement help from surrounding states. Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake has put a mandatory curfew in place from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.
We just spoke with a reporter from Baltimore Public Radio, WYPR. Now we turn to Dan Diamond. He's a contributor for Forbes and editor of the Advisory Board's Daily Briefing, a healthcare newsletter. He grew up in Baltimore and has been following the events there. He wrote a piece called Why Baltimore Burned. Dan, welcome to Central Time.
Veronica, thank you for having me.
Well, what was your first reaction when you heard that there were riots in Baltimore following Freddie Gray's funeral?
Well, on the one hand, it was kind of a sad reaction of not being surprised. We have come to expect some civil unrest after various tragedies that have happened in these past number of months. What also happened was I was on a flight back from California to the East Coast, and I was sitting next to really one of the nation's leading public health experts. We were talking on background, so I don't want to say who it was. But the two of us ended up getting into a longer conversation, me as a health reporter, this person as an expert, on what were the underlying reasons behind this sort of reaction in Baltimore. Where was this anger coming from? How much of it was because of the structural inequality in the city? And that got me thinking about my feelings and thoughts here, and that led to the story that you mentioned.
And that conversation that you mentioned, one way to capture it is your point of view that there are really two Baltimores. What do you mean by that?
So that's right. I guess I played off the Dickens line of two cities, except in Baltimore's case, they're the two cities in the one city. There's an anecdote that I think explains Baltimore really well, something that you only know if you've lived there. And I spent 20 years there. My parents still live there. I go back a lot. And in Baltimore, when you go out to dinner with someone, they ask you where you went to school. And they don't mean a college like Madison or Indiana. They want to know what local private school in Baltimore you went to, what private high school. And that's because many public schools in Baltimore are so underfunded that families with any money, they try and send their kids to private school. And I don't think that that's typical across the country. I can't say I know Wisconsin all that well. But that's the Baltimore I knew. That's the world I lived in. On the other hand, you know, really not very far from where I grew up, just a couple miles, there was another Baltimore. And that part of the city, there were 40%, 50% of households living under the poverty level, which is about $12,000 a person, or, you know, a household of four, that's $24,000, not a lot to live on. I did volunteer work. I interned at the Baltimore Sun. I spent a lot of time in those communities, and it was striking how little help, how few tools and strategies kids my age in those communities had to draw on if they were looking to build their lives in a different direction to get out of those neighborhoods.
Now, President Obama weighed in on this yesterday, talking about how the nation needs to look for longer-term solutions. Here's what he had to say.
But I think we as a country have to do some soul-searching. If we think that we're just going to send the police to do the dirty work of containing the problems that arise there without, as a nation and as a society, saying what can we do to change those communities to help lift up those communities and give those kids opportunity, then we're not going to solve this problem.
And Dan, that gets at what you were referring to earlier, you and your seatmate, public health expert at a national level, talking about some structural inequalities. You came up with a list of things that needed to be addressed. What did you come up with?
Sure, Veronica, and I think the president was getting to some of this, that you need to have safe housing in these communities. Do you have programs to train folks to help them to acquire job skills? Do you have the proper food and nutrition, especially for kids who are developing? And in a place like Baltimore, and I bet in, you know, a big city like Milwaukee too, there are these areas of what we call food deserts where there really is no fresh produce. Locals end up going to a fast food place or 7-Eleven to get what they need to eat. And is there a stable community in Baltimore, in the neighborhood where Freddie Gray was living? About 1 in 3 homes sits vacant. That's, you know, staggering to think about. And in a city like Baltimore, where there has been so much traffic, so much flight to the suburbs, that just leaves behind the folks who can't leave. And I know that Baltimore specifically has tried all kinds of different tactics to get people to come back in to the city, various homeowner purchase discounts and trying to lure businesses back in too. But for a variety of reasons, it just hasn't worked over the past couple decades.
As people from different communities in Baltimore look at what happened yesterday, what could happen tonight, and try to put all of it in context, it looks as though people are looking back quite a ways. How far would you say that some of these issues you're talking about, how far back do they go?
Oh, I have to say 40 or 50 years. I mean, Baltimore infamously had a much worse riot in the 1960s, I think 1968 off the top of my head, and these were issues back then too. So nothing new. You know, this crisis didn't emerge just this week. These were tensions that have simmered and festered, and no one in Baltimore has known what to do about them. And they broke open with the Freddie Gray tragedy. I would actually add one thing, though. Baltimore, to me, is not exceptional in the sense that these issues are across the country in any big city where you find massive inequality between the well-off and those who are less well-off. I think Milwaukee has probably similarities to Baltimore in that sense. And that is, as a health reporter and someone who tracks policy issues around the country, that concerns me, that we overlook this inequality until we're forced to confront it.
Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Veronica.
We've been talking to Dan Diamond, contributor for Forbes and editor of the Advisory Board's Daily Briefing, a healthcare newsletter. He grew up in Baltimore, and he joined us to talk about his piece, Why Baltimore Burned.